Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to episode 45 of Global Leader Radio. The purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. So we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways, including resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. And we've got a great one today. So today we welcome Dr. Stacy Shuker to Global Leader Radio. And Stacy is president at Down South Innovation, a partnership development firm focused on connecting clients with academic and corporate decision makers of the life science community in the Southeast. So Stacy has been a part of Atlanta's innovation community since 2006. She started as a scientific advisor in an intellectual property law firm and a volunteer in Georgia's innovation nonprofit organizations. And in 2008, she moved to the Georgia Department of Economic Development as a director of the Center of Innovation for Life Sciences and pioneered the use of social media in economic development. So as director of partnership development for Georgia Bio, she initiated an industry outreach program. So Dr. Shuker devotes her professional volunteer efforts to making the Southeastern region a thriving ecosystem for innovation and commercialization. And you really can't have one without the other, right? It always works best when they come together.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Dr. Shuker completed her undergrad chemistry degree at the University of Georgia and went on to get her PhD in inorganic chemistry at Carnegie Mellon, as opposed to organic chemistry.
Right.
Okay. And so, Stacy, welcome to Global Leader Radio.
Thank you, Alvin. I'm so glad to be here. And you know, I sound so impressive when you read my bio.
You're very impressive. You're impressed, aren't you, Dana?
I'm like, I'm beside myself. I don't even understand half of what you just said.
Neither do I, Dana.
You know, you don't have to understand it as long as you can do it, right?
Exactly.
So to begin with, please tell us a little bit about Stacy Shuker, starting with your original birthplace, home, and a little bit about your work experience, and take us up to the present.
Sure. I was born in Athens, Georgia, and I'm actually eighth generation Georgian. My family has been here since before the Revolution. So,
wow.
So you know, it's, I'm a big fan of Georgia, and you know, want to be here for the rest of my life. Mm. And it was when I spent 8 years in graduate school up in Pittsburgh. Nothing told me more that I wanted to be in Georgia than the last snowstorm that I had to endure. So, you know, so I went to the University of Georgia. I was an Athens girl. I went to the University of Georgia. And then I decided that I wanted to get out of the South and just to see what was out there. And so I went to Pittsburgh. I went to Carnegie Mellon and lived there and got my PhD. And then this was like in 1999 when we were having the dot-com boom. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I want to be an entrepreneur, you know, and because people back then were writing, you know, business plans on, you know, bar napkins and getting funding, you know. And then about the time I came home, I wanted to start a science toy company because mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I had the Sears chemistry set, you know, and this was back in the old days when it was a metal and it had like plutonium and lead, you know, and all those things that can kill a kid. But I couldn't do a lot of the experiments because my mother didn't know where to go find some of the other components of the experiment. So what I wanted to do is unbundle the Sears chemistry set and be able to put a standalone experiment in a can or a box and sell that so the kid could go and do that experiment without having to go find anything. And so I created a new crystal growing kit that grew cross-shaped crystals in gelatin. And so nobody had ever done that before, and I got a patent on it. And I got it into very, very limited release in Walmart. But you know, the thing is that I didn't understand what I didn't know about sales, and I didn't marketing, and you know all the things that you're, Alvin, I'm sure you're very good at, you know, and because I was a scientist,
that's right, and you're a scientist. not a business person, right,
or a salesperson,
or a salesperson, and
they're actually diametrically opposed, salespeople and scientists, they're on the opposite ends of the spectrum,
yes,
and so there was a lot I had to learn about business. And I had to learn it in the very hard, very, very expensive way, you know, and in the School of Hard Knocks. And it was invaluable education. But, you know, it's one of those things you don't know what you don't know until you find out you don't know it. And that can be... that can be an adventure.
Yeah, interesting. So now, when you did this stuff with the kit that you patented in 2004, mm-hmm. were you in Pittsburgh still, or were you back here?
I was back here.
You were back here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you came back, your principal role was... in terms of working, you were an entrepreneur 100% of the time.
And I fed my entrepreneur habit by working for a textbook company.
Wow.
And in the school system, you have annual textbook adoptions.
Okay.
And so the year that I started working for them, it was a science adoption year. So I would go and talk to teachers. And so I got the opportunity to go and visit almost all of the 159 counties in the state of Georgia, and I got to see the disparity between some of the resources that people in cities and in people in the rural areas,
more urban versus rural, right?
And there's a great divide in the educational opportunities for students who are in sort of the beer belly of the South, where it's mostly agriculture, and I mean you can see that the state's invested in that, but it's
still a great disparity.
It's a great disparity, yeah.
Yeah, so how did that touch you? I mean, obviously, you still remember to this day, so obviously it had an impact on you, right?
I remember I went to a couple of counties where they were using 12-year-old science books, and they still didn't know if they were going to adopt new books. And I mean, these books were held together by duct tape. There was one teacher who they weren't going to be able to afford to buy textbooks at all. And so you get samples of textbooks. And I was like, here, take this one and take this one. I want to make sure that they had, at least something,
right,
to teach with. But yeah, it was access to those kinds of educational resources are really important for what we do as a state.
Yeah, and it can also severely hamper or, quite frankly, help quite a bit if you've got the right resources, right? And the teachers feel empowered as well.
Sure, absolutely. And it's also an economic thing. A company is not going to come in and put a high-tech facility in a place where children aren't very well educated because that's their workforce.
Yes. Interesting. So that brings you up to what you're doing now. So tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world today.
Well, Down South Innovation is a partnership development firm. I help create connections and build relationships. And it can either be a large pharmaceutical or device company that's looking to find innovations in the South, because there's a lot of innovations in the South. It's just hard to get to all the different pockets of innovation around in this region. And or conversely, I also help startup companies who are looking to get into the life sciences industry and help them make the connections. Like one of my clients is a company called Safely Locked.
Okay.
And they have an encrypted collaborative platform. So it's like a highly secure Dropbox.
Wow.
And so, one of the things that's a huge issue in innovation is intellectual property.
Absolutely.
And the confidentiality of that intellectual property. And so, a lot of times people will use Dropbox, which is horrible because it's not secure.
Yes.
And so this platform allows for secure collaboration because it has true end-to-end encryption.
Okay.
So that's important. But how's that relevant to the pharmaceutical? So it's the pharmaceutical people just need something that they can go into Starbucks, use Starbucks wireless net, and send information across the world to another Starbucks. And so this platform will let you do that. So they're really, really good at encryption, but how do you get that into something like medical records or the pharmaceutical industry?
I see. So that's part of the challenge too, right?
Right. So I open the doors and walk them through and help them build the relationships they need to move forward.
Down South Innovation.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay, so how do you describe yourself to others? Do you say that you're a chemist? Do you say that you're an inventor? You say you're an innovator? You say you're an enabler? Toy maker?
How does it that depends work? On the day.
And who you're talking to, right?
And who I'm talking to. If it's my mother, it's one thing. If it's someone like you, I'm a partnership development consultant.
Okay.
I've spent a lot of time in the southeastern region community. I've built a lot of relationships. I know where the talent is.
Okay.
And I can get people into that room, and usually with, you know, mutual advantage to both parties.
Okay. So at this point in your career, have you been able to circle back to some of those more disadvantaged areas of Georgia and perhaps reached out some way, shape, form, or fashion?
You know, I have not.
Okay. But it's on the agenda, right?
It's on the agenda. I'm actually I still volunteer with Georgia Bio. And so I've created a manufacturing and logistics committee for our industry, because our industry is very specific for manufacturing and logistics, because we have a lot of FDA oversight.
Okay.
And so it's not like you can just make this pen and put it on a truck and ship it to, you know, somewhere. You have to take this pen, keep it, you know, climate controlled at a certain temperature, no germs.
It's got to be tested
as well. It's got to be tested and monitored. And so there's a whole range of issues that, you know, you have to deal with in manufacturing and logistics in our industry. So what's really interesting about the growth of the life sciences industry in Georgia is that a lot of it's manufacturing.
Okay.
And so that gives you the opportunity to put a manufacturing facility in a rural area as long as the workforce is capable of working there.
Of doing the work.
So one of the issues that comes up with in this committee, we just had our initial meeting, so we're trying to figure out who we are and what we're going to do. But one of that is workforce development and education, and making sure that we're producing people who can go into a facility and make sure that you're FDA compliant. But those facilities are growing along I-20. And 316, where there's a lot of rural, a lot of rural area. And
right.
If you've ever driven to Augusta, you know how rural that is.
Yes.
But, you know, logistically, that's a great place to put a facility, because you can reach the port of Savannah, you can reach the airport, you can reach, 85% of the American population within 3 days of a truck.
Wow.
So this is a great time for that overlap of being able to advance the educational opportunities in rural Georgia. And you know, attract more industry.
Well, that's impressive to hear a chemist talk like that. That's truly impressive. So you were a scientific advisor at a law firm, as what we talked about a little earlier, during the onset of the Great Recession.
Right.
But you chose not to pursue law school. Now, interestingly enough, my oldest daughter was accepted into law school, and she begins in the fall. So is there something I should know before I send my check to that school? Is there a reason why you chose not to pursue law school?
Well, it's... I really love intellectual property law. I find it fascinating. And, you know, as someone who'd actually paid for a patent and never really knew what was going on behind the curtain, and being able to learn, you know, what, you know, the ins and outs of how do you get a patent through the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, you know, what are issues with licensing and agreements like that. I found it's fairly solitary work. And I like being able to engage with other people. I'm really more of an introvert instead of an extrovert. But I like being able to talk to other human beings. You know,
right.
Like one on one, like you and I right now.
You got it.
And so I wanted to find something else that would allow me to get out and build more relationships and learn new things.
Okay.
But you know, I was actually reading an article today about the death of the big law firms.
You know,
and
on LinkedIn, right?
It did. It's on LinkedIn. And
I saw that one too. That's what I get for following you.
She might want to take a peek at that.
Okay, I'll make sure she gets that one. That's for certain. So, Stacy, what talents and resources would it take to make for a world-class life sciences innovation community?
I think we need more relationships, more opportunities to congregate. But I think also there's going to have to be a mind shift in the South, that our innovation community doesn't stop at the state line, because, you know, you talk about what's going on in Alabama or what's going on in Atlanta or South Carolina, when actually there's a network of talent here that if we all work together, then we would have an industry the size of California.
Wow.
If you take a state-by-state report of the life sciences industries in Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, and South Carolina, and put them all together, we go head-to-head with California in every way except venture capital and patents.
You mean going head-to-head with California Silicon Valley?
The life science, the biotech industry.
Oh, got it. Okay, person. I understand. And, mm-hmm. and that's pretty solid, right?
The thing is that we need the venture capital and the intellectual property here, and we just don't have that many firms that invest in life sciences here, so we are an underserved region.
Okay.
But taken together, if we work together, then we would be an extremely powerful block compared to California or Boston.
So what does it take to make that happen? Is it just more people funding it, or is it really people that are looking to protect it and being able to really grow that industry?
I think it's people changing their mind to a more of a regional attitude, and that's one of the things that I talk about on my blog, is that I think Atlanta should change its mindset to use its resources to advance the southeastern region, not just Georgia and not just Atlanta.
Okay.
Because you know, when you get into the innovation community, or you get into the economic development community that tries, you know, to support innovation, you hear about, like, we got to beat North Carolina, or we got to beat Florida, and you know, and that's very detrimental to us moving together as a region. And I'm certainly not the only one who thinks that we should think regionally. It's just, you know, I just use my blog and as a way to move that forward, because you know, we've actually got some really great here's a great example of what we need to be doing more of. The University of Georgia hosted the first Southeastern Southeastern Regional Association for Shared Resources.
Okay. Okay.
And so they had people from Florida, Tennessee, Georgia, and what the shared resources facilities are is, like, when you have a university lab that just does a certain kind of microscopy or different, you know, certain kind of spectroscopy, and so people send in their samples. And they say, please look at this and give me the results. And you hope that they send you back a result where you can, you know, publish something. Or,
yes.
You know, and so the premise of this, everybody competes. Everybody wants to have the best microscopy facility. And mm-hmm. so, you know, you might have one in Tennessee. You might have one in South Carolina. And they, you know, they're duking it out with each other. What this conference was meant to start people thinking about is, let's work as a network, and let's stop competing with each other.
Right.
So that, like,
right.
We'll just let Tennessee be the best, you know, electron microscope facility. I don't know if that's Tennessee, but you know, let them do that
for the South.
For the South,
not just for the state.
Not just for the state,
or
not just for the university.
Okay.
You know, because sometimes you'll have in-state
rivalry.
Mm. And so what they're trying to convey, the message, is let's work together as a region and act as a network, as opposed to competing with each other for a limited number of clients and dollars.
That makes total sense to me. So how do you actually get people to move from such a closed system,
mm-hmm.
be it a university or it's a state, or and then get them to move to a regional perspective? I mean, that's kind of interesting. But first, I want to get you to back up just a bit.
Sure.
What makes up the states in the quote-unquote South or the Southeast? Is there much differentiation between the two?
It depends. I think of the Southern region as just where I work.
Okay.
is just Georgia and all the states that touch it.
Got it. Okay.
But a lot of organizations that address the South include Louisiana, mm-hmm. Mississippi, sometimes Texas, and sometimes Virginia.
Not Florida.
Oh, and Florida as well.
But it does touch it. That's right. It does touch Georgia. Yes. So good. So now I understand that CNBC recently named Georgia the 8th best state for business,
mm-hmm.
up one spot from the last time they did this. So in terms of the talent and resources that Atlanta currently has, what do you see there? What do you see as the key strength for us in the life sciences industry?
Oh, well, it's certainly our universities. And
okay.
Because we have Georgia Tech, Emory, Georgia State,
mm-hmm.
Kennesaw.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have the University of Georgia and Georgia Regents University, the former Medical College of Georgia.
Okay.
And then we also have an incredible technical college system that's really working to help students get into the life sciences industry without having to get a four-year degree. You can get a two-year degree and work as a technician.
Wow.
So Gwinnett Tech and Athens Tech have worked very hard to develop that curriculum. But one of the things that's really great about our innovation system, ecosystem here in Atlanta, is that you've got Georgia Tech and Emory, and they, Georgia Tech's a state-funded school, and Emory's private.
Right.
But they have a lot of joint departments together, and so they're faculty that are both, faculty at Georgia Tech and at Emory, or have the equivalent privileges, and so that has led to a lot of biomedical innovation that could not have happened before. Because Emory's, a very, very good medical school, very, very good research and pharmaceuticals, things like that. Georgia Tech's very, very good at engineering. And so it's sort of like the Reese's moment, the chocolate hits the peanut butter and everything's better as a result.
I love it. So tell us a little bit about what you do with Down South Innovation above and beyond what you already kind of explained to us, because there could be more things that I perhaps have missed. You mentioned you're pulling people together. You're doing a blog. You've got a website, too.
Basically, my blog serves as my website. It's downsouthinnovation.org, and it's an online community of Southern innovators. I started this when I was the director of the Center of Innovation for Life Sciences, and what had happened is that the Great Recession had occurred, and my marketing budget got cut by $85,000. And so I said, I need something to do that's free, and so I started using
free or nearly free.
free or nearly free. So I started using Facebook.
Okay.
And then Twitter and LinkedIn. But then I came across this platform for creating communities called Ning. And I created a group called the Georgia Life Sciences Team-Up Network. And the reason why I did that is because I met so many people across the state from science, from business, law, marketing, management, logistics, manufacturing.
Wow.
And because you can't just be – like the superhuman innovator of life sciences. You got to have somebody who's really, really smart in science, and then you got to have somebody who's really smart in business, and they all have to come together
and converge
in a huge gamish. And so this is a virtual gamish of life sciences talent. So
now, how do you spell that again? Is that a research term?
It's a highly, highly technical term with Latin roots.
There you go, with Latin roots, gamish. I like it.
It sounded like a pastry, I
think. With a little sugar on top, right?
Exactly.
I love it.
And so what I do is I keep my members informed about news and events that are going on in the South.
Okay.
And so people who want to know about certain biotech conferences or interesting news that goes on, and people who want to stay connected there. So I've got about 1,000 members, and and they post on the blog as well when they want something shared with the region as well. So it's starting to take. I've got most of my members are from Georgia.
Okay,
but it's starting to spread out into the region. But so that's a way that I can continue. Working, being able to connect with people across the South and keep them informed, because that's something I really enjoyed about, what I've done over the past 5 years is being able to keep people informed, because it's very, a lot of times if you're in regulatory, you're in regulatory. You're thinking about the FDA,
right?
But you need to stay connected about what's going on, what else is going on. So that this is a platform where people can learn about the general industry as a whole.
So the larger world.
The larger world, right.
The big picture. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, very good. So who are the ideal fits for the network? Are there certain groups out there that perhaps should be a part of the network that you would like to make sure that they at least understand they should be?
Sure. It's everybody who touches life science innovation. So it could be students. It could be researchers. It could be somebody who runs a manufacturing facility. It could be patent lawyers, corporate lawyers, business people. It's the point is that we all have to come together, and so this is a way for you to be able to make connections across the region.
Okay, so are there any specific benefits for those joining the network?
Well, it's free.
It is free. That's a big benefit.
and it gives you your weekly emails about the opportunities to connect. What are the conferences? What are the networking events that are going on in the South? And also, I mean, it also helps organizations get the word out about what they're doing. Because one of the things that I noticed, you know, over the years that I've been doing this is that everybody's got their distribution list, and your distribution list is always, you know, getting less and less relevant, you know, as people move on and change. This is an people log on to my network with their email address, and so okay. Regards where they are, you know, if they use their Yahoo or Gmail account, I'm always going to be able to reach them, and so it's like a common distribution list for people in the South to make sure that their word gets out.
Yeah, very good. So we're talking with Stacy Shuker. Stacy is president at Down South Innovation, a partnership development firm focused on connecting clients with academic and corporate decision makers of the life sciences community in the Southeast. And for those of you that have followed us on LinkedIn and Twitter today, you realize that the topic of today's conversation is whether or not Atlanta needs to be the driver of innovation and connection for the Southeast. And so we'll turn that question to you, Stacy. What are the reasons that Atlanta needs to be the driver for pulling this together? Is it geography? Is it access to talent, or a combination of that, or
it's
something else?
It's our resources. We're actually in the middle of the whole bioscience region in the South, and you know, I think a lot of people think that Atlanta just wants to keep the resources for themselves, and some of them do, but we have the opportunity to advance innovation across the South because we've got, you know, our business economy, we've got the airport, mm-hmm. We've got these world-class institutions but we also have world-class institutions in other states.
So
I think it needs to be a responsibility of us in the Atlanta community to change the way that we think about how we engage with the South.
The world does not revolve around Atlanta.
Instead of saying the world revolves around Atlanta, saying Atlanta has a responsibility to go, you know, make the world a better place.
I like that. So has this whole idea of really supporting a Southeastern life sciences innovation community, is that new?
No, I'm certainly not the first one to do that. I just try to be more loud about it than everybody else. And so we have organizations like the Southeast Medical Device Association, the Southeast Bio Organization, which is the premier venture capital event of the year in the South. That's when, you know, a lot of venture capitalists will actually get on a plane and come to somewhere in the South, mm-hmm. to see emerging companies. And then we also have our state bio affiliates or biotech industry organizations. They've always worked together in a great way. But you know, there's a growing number of us who just, we're trying to figure out how to make it work, but it is, you know, it's not something, if it was easy to do, it would be done already.
Correct. And so you're bringing together people in cross-functional areas, mm-hmm. and you're looking for greater innovation and new solutions, mm-hmm. and figuring out ways to do it in a way that services and serves all, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we do at the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, too. It's fun that my job is to interview people who are functionally strong in an area, for example, marketing, mm-hmm. for example, life sciences. Mm-hmm. We've had rocket scientists come through our program.
Oh, wow.
And interestingly enough, they want to learn more about business. Mm-hmm. And so to understand how marketing affects HR and how mm-hmm. HR affects the capital structure and how to pull all of these dangling participles, as it were, mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. to make your product complete and whole, mm-hmm. and your service complete and whole, is certainly a challenge. So I certainly understand what you're trying to go through when you're trying to pull people who are primarily starting a research area, mm-hmm. especially with life sciences, and saying, hey, you know what? You might need to think about business.
Right.
And oh, by the way, while you're thinking about it, let's make sure that we understand that we've got to make this more of a regional community versus a local community.
Right.
Because the world is bigger than just us.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be a challenge. What are some of the challenges you've seen?
You get some members of the old guard who are a little bit myopic, and you know their rivalries, you know, start on the football field. And
you are so politically correct.
I know.
You are good.
it's like sometimes you just want to go, dude. You know,
let it go. Let it go.
And so, I think, you have some people in leadership who are just not ever going to, see any connection between Atlanta and Athens or, okay. Atlanta and Alabama. And they're never going to change their mind.
Wow.
So, I think, you just need to focus on the people who are younger, who understand the importance of the collaborative nature and how it's going to affect innovation. And we cannot have life science innovation without collaboration.
Okay.
And without patent attorneys collaborating with business people, collaborating with researchers, and they all have their own language and their own personality types and their own way of doing things. And that's where a lot of life science innovation runs into the ditch because the scientist can't speak to the lawyer and he can't speak to the business person or the venture capitalist. And and it's the same thing in our region. It's like we have to be able to talk to our neighbors and think about how we can advance together, as opposed to saying, I'm gonna make sure Alabama stays out of the game. And so I think there's plenty of people who think that, but there's not a central place where people can go, hey, you know what? This needs to change.
So I love your response. As a matter of fact, you're kind of giving me a perfect segue. Because what you're saying is that once these networks are in place, they really can't run themselves.
Mm-mm, no.
They're going to continue to need some leadership
yes.
to continue to bring this together and keep reminding people why we're here. Talk a little bit about that leadership aspect. What are you needing? What do you think the network is really needing in terms of leaders and leadership to keep it moving forward?
I think there needs to be more opportunities to connect virtually. Because a lot of in life sciences innovation is a trust-based business.
Hmm.
Because in a lot of ways it can be very exclusive and hard to get into. And the reason most likely is because if you're going to take this new medical device, I've spent 20 years working on bioengineering. I created this medical device, and I get somebody to invest $20 million in it, just a number. And then you've got to go find people who are in regulatory, who are in intellectual property, and they all have to get it right.
Right.
And so if somebody, is flaky at one point on the chain, that can derail hundreds of millions of dollars of investment.
Point.
And in years, your career, you're just not going to have another opportunity sometimes to get another device through, because it takes so long for you to get there in the first place.
Yeah.
And so people have to trust each other implicitly, or at least they have to have a good reputation of not being somebody who will derail that innovation process. And so what I think is going to help build this region is to create more virtual connections and ways to exchange ideas and information across the region, so that more trust can be developed between these pockets of excellence.
Yes. So trust is still important. It doesn't really matter if we're in the life sciences industry or trying to build a business in another way. Trust is still the key.
Yeah. Yeah. And trust and integrity and the ability to work hard and there are a lot of people who work really, really hard, and they don't ever make it as a success. And it's not their fault. A lot of people can invest, their lives in getting this device through, but because the human body doesn't react to it the way it's supposed to, it's never going to see the light of day. So because you can be the smartest chemist in the world and get your drug all the way through to the human trials. But you can't tell the human liver to, like, hey, don't collapse when you get this, because this needs to go to the heart, and you just there's no cajoling, and so that's that's one of the features of the life sciences industry that I think a lot of people don't understand, like, especially if you're from the software side, because machines are dumb. You can make them do whatever you want.
Okay.
The human body is going to be the thing that determines whether or not you're successful.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So differentiate for us between sciences and life sciences.
Well, you like, chemistry could be a science.
Okay.
And life sciences, I use that term to refer to biotechnology, medical devices, pharmacology, but drugs and devices.
Okay. Okay. You know, earlier you were a kind of funny thought came into my mind when you said, you know, one of the hardest things, you know, about what you do is and what the entrepreneurs and the innovators are doing in the life sciences industry is being able to get this drug or this device or whatever to market. I'm thinking that the hardest thing for me, Dana, would be getting that daggum chemistry degree. That inorganic chemistry thing sounds pretty tough, right?
Dude, yeah. You lost me after like 12th grade. And even then,
Yeah, it's all gravy up to that point. I mean, yeah. That's probably because I play in the business sandbox. But wow, that sounds like it's kind of over my head here. But getting back to basics here, when you think about the leadership that it takes to be able to move the industry that you in the area where you want to move it and really kind of congregate this from more of a localized area to more of a regionalized area and bringing more people in, it's going to take, as you pointed out, leadership. Mm-hmm. And so, how does Stacey Shuker define leadership?
I don't know. Well, I don't. I guess I should have come with a response to that.
We're going to talk it through.
You know, it's I don't really consider myself a leader. I just sort of like, I'm a lot like my grandmother, who was she lived in rural Heard County, and she basically ran the Methodist Church. You know, it's like she would clean the church before homecoming, and she would organize the homecoming picnic. You know, and send out, you know, because no one else would do it. You know, and.
And that's what leaders do.
It needs to be done, you know. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you see something that's broken, and it's like, well, go fix it, you know. And you know,
I love that. I love that definition. So one who sees things that are broken, and they step forward to fix it.
Yes, and there are a lot of members of the life sciences industry who feel the way that I do, and you know, there's no shortage of people who. Who see the broken things and are fixing, you know, that want to fix it. So it's, I appreciate you calling me a leader, but you know, there's a lot of us are around there. They're working to fix what we face.
Understood. But they're not here, and you are. So
you're sitting in the chair.
You're sitting in the chair today. So we've got you here today. So we're going to enjoy you today. So, well, you talked about your grandmother, and so who else have you admired that has impacted your leadership style? Or who has provided the best models of leadership for you? Some things that are indelibly implanted in your mind as to when I get to a position where I need to make things happen, here's kind of the way I'll do it because I remember this person did it this way and it was successful.
There was one person and one organization. There was a person who helped me get into the intellectual property law firm, who was an attorney there, who used to work for the Coca-Cola company and you know, was a leader there. And so he gave me the benefit of his wisdom over many lunches and you know, and taught me about how you know, how to engage with people, how to treat people, how not to treat people. And then the organization that I think had the most impact on my life, on my leadership in life, my leadership in the life sciences industry is the Junior League.
Okay.
When I was in Athens, I was in the Junior League of Athens, and you know, and I had just come out of graduate school, and you know, had you know a stunted personality as a result.
and so, I love it.
So somebody said, "Well, you should be in the Junior League because this is in Athens, you know, and right, you're supposed to be right. in the Junior League of Athens." And I was like, "Oh man, I don't want to do that," you know. And so finally, I went, and then I started to realize that you know the Junior League used to have a reputation of being, you know, white gloves and pearls, and being very exclusive. And you know, when I got in there, I started meeting a lot of other women who saw things that were broken and wanted to go fix it, you know, and you know, what I learned from the Junior League is never let them see you get mad.
Okay.
You know, because it's a volunteer organization and you just have to go, oh, that's all right. You know, is when somebody, you know, drops the ball and, you know, you have to spend 4 hours, you know, cleaning up their mess. You still have to tilt your head to the right and smile, you know. And so I have found that, you know, never really holding a grudge or, you know, never, you know, counting people's mistakes or their shortcomings gives you the opportunity to engage with them in the future in a more meaningful way. Because if somebody lets you down and, you know, you go, well, I am never talking to Bob again, you know, and you never talk to Bob again, you miss out on the opportunity to, you know, for you and Bob to do, you know, to do some meaningful work, because you know, Bob may have let you down then, but he also has other skills. And so I find that, you know, just letting people's foibles and faults roll off your back gives you the opportunity to circle back around in the future and maybe do something really impressive that if you had broken that bridge or you broken that connection, you would have never been able to do.
So that's a very profound statement. And we talked in the green room earlier about these profundities that I knew you'd be able to bring to the table.
I don't know where that
chemistry majors certainly have got profundities. There's no two ways about that.
We've got something. I'm not sure it's profundities.
Well, I'll tell you that. So now we've got, you know, again, you know, we've got folks who are in the life sciences industry that are primarily scientists, and so they don't get the kind of polish that you've obviously have gone through when you look at your background with the Junior League. So it's going to take a special type of leader to be able to try to corral those people and bring them in and kind of help them. What kind of focus do you have within your own community, that little community that you're building, that network, Down South Innovation, that addresses that part of it, which can be seen as the softer side, but to me is the harder side, which is the interpersonal relationships.
I do. I actually have done a couple of presentations more in a humorous light of what not to do as a scientist. Like if you're going to be a science entrepreneur, you know, don't ever tell your business plan to the bartender. You know? I can't tell you how many times I've seen like this poor bartender going, while this geek is telling them about, you know, how great their new drug is, you know, you know, and you know, it's, you know, scientists come by it naturally. You know, first of all, most of them are built that way in the first place. And then, you know, your scientific training teaches you, you know, don't self-promote and but it also tells you, you know, that you've always got to be right.
Yeah.
You know? And so when you're going to be working in innovation and, you know, in the life sciences industry trying to bring a drug or device to market, there's going to be a whole lot of times you're not going to be right. And there's going to be a whole lot of times when you're not going to know the answer. Because in science, everything's rules based, you know,
right.
We've got gravity and we've worked our way up from there. And you know, it's like, there's we like structure, right?
That's right.
And so the further you get away from science in life science innovation, the wigglier things get.
Oh, absolutely. You know, so, shades of gray start popping in, right?
And then scientists start going, you know, danger Will Robinson, danger Will Robinson. Yeah. And they can't wiggle with the system. And so that's, you know, that's a real difficulty, that's an added level of difficulty on top of an already difficult industry.
Yeah, which means that you're perfectly suited for doing what you're doing with the network. I don't know that there could be very many other people that could pull it off the way you're able to pull it off, based on the background you've had, the things you've seen, and the fact that you're in the life. I mean, you've got credibility to be able to help move people and understand the interpersonal side of it, right? I mean, I couldn't do it because, quite frankly, I don't have the credibility in the life sciences industry.
Yes, you could. We would love to have you because
but I can't speak the language.
Yeah, but see, the thing is that you understand business.
Yes.
And so you could bring your expertise and your charm to the life sciences industry and be a very important contributor.
And a scientist would buy that?
Yeah. After I got finished with him. Yeah.
That's my point. We've got to have you in, right, Dana? I can't do this alone.
No. Well, she just made you look really good. So
I
go
it.
With that.
I love it. I love it. So when you think through all the things that I mean, have you ever sat back and said, boy, this is a pretty big, tall order here? I mean, we've got a lot of old guard here.
Uh-huh.
We got new guard coming in, and you're bringing in the new guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then here you're approaching it with a different gender. And so now you're coming into a kind of a different environment. So you really are a revolutionary, right?
I'm just nuts.
Yeah. You know, and it takes some of that, right?
I guess you have to do to be a little bit crazy, yes.
Yeah, that's what Seal said in that song. It was a pretty popular song. You know, you're never going to survive unless we're a little crazy. So when you think about what's important to you in terms of mentorship, are you mentoring anyone or coaching anyone at this point?
No, I would never inflict that on the young. I don't have a structured mentoring program, but I always end up being introduced to some person that says, you know, you really need to meet Stacy Shuker and talk. And so I go have coffee with them. And, mm-hmm. you know, I bring them into the Down South Innovation fold and, you know, make sure that they can stay connected. Because a lot of times, you know, because of the disjointed nature of our industry and because of our geography in the state, a lot of times you can just wander around bumping into walls, you wow. know, because you just don't know where to go. You don't know about Georgia Bio. You don't know about Southeast Medical Device Association. So sometimes it just you need a place of connection just so that you don't wander around in the wild lost.
Okay.
And so that kind of mentoring thing, I help them find the organizations that they need or and connect them with other people. And but I don't have anything like I've got three poor victims that I'm mentoring.
Stop it. There would never be poor victims if you were mentoring and coaching them, of course. So what does Stacy Shuker do to ensure she continues to grow and develop as a leader?
Continue to meet as many people as possible. I find that, you know, if I can sit down with someone for an hour or hopefully two, you know, I can find out what, you know, the gist of that person, you know, and you know what makes Alvin tick, you know, and why does Alvin get up out of bed in the morning, and
because he's got a 53-mile drive. That's part of it.
Bless your heart. So I mean, if now that I've you know sat across the table from you, I have a better idea about you, and I can you know I can use you as a resource.
Exactly, and how to connect, and then you know already know how to connect and
right.
you know the other areas.
And you know, and I do. I find it useful that, unlike today where I'm spending most of the time talking, it's like keeping your mouth shut and letting another person talk is really the most powerful tool that I have. You know, is a closed mouth, you know, and open ears can do a lot more for you than impressing somebody 10 times a day, you know, and because I always have that relationship with you after I've spent the hour.
So that would be a key takeaway, right? Need to listen. We need to listen more and talk a little bit less.
It works for me.
I love it. It works for you. I love that. So what do you do to recharge the batteries to keep you sharp and on the cutting edge, innovative?
You know, I spend a lot of time by myself, you know, and like I
said. Introspection, shall we say?
Yeah, it's just some introspection. And I'm also by nature a little introverted.
Okay.
And like I can go to a networking event and meet everybody, get business cards, you know, hugs, kisses, blah blah blah. And but like usually those networking events precede an educational event.
Okay.
You know, like by the time I get finished with a networking thing, I'm like so over people that, you know, I have to bail, you know.
It takes a few days just to recoup,
like,
right?
So, you know, like I need to go be by myself or with, you know, with my fiance, soon to be husband, you know, and just have that like time, you know, where nobody else wants anything from me. And that's, that generally keeps me in good stead.
And that can't be very often when you're around people, because I would imagine that you pretty much are a magnet. When people see you walking in, it's pretty much, oh, there she is. We've got to go.
No,
we've got to understand what happens next here.
No, it's like, oh, there she is.
That's too funny. So, Stacy, now we get to the final question of our time together. So we'll make both the audio and the video of your response to this question available on our web posting. Right. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
Probably, I would have to say Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
Wow.
Because, you know, there's a lot of lessons in that book about integrity, doing things that are great and that are good for other people, that, you know, that focusing on becoming rich or becoming successful, doesn't necessarily mean you have to be craven and you know, manipulate other people. I mean, it can be the coming together of good people who want to do good things, and making that happen and making, you know, deriving an income from that. Mm. And you know, and I think you'll find a lot of people in the life sciences industry like that, because you know there are easier ways to make a living than the life sciences industry. You know, it's fraught with failure and it's hard. You know, you have to go get that PhD yeah. in something, you know, you know yeah. a lot of the times, or you go to law school. And so, I mean, there'd be an easier way to make a living. But because we have the ability to impact and impact the lives of other people, ease their suffering, you know, or you know, cure diseases, we do that. So I mean, Napoleon Hill's thoughts about leadership and about advancing new innovations are very important to the life sciences industry.
Well, that's impressive. And so on behalf of our learning community, we've learned quite a bit from you today, and we appreciate you accepting the invitation to join us. And I'd love to have you back on the show sometime in the future if you can sync our calendars. Would that be a deal?
I would be delighted. Thank you so much for having
me. That's too cool. So with that in mind, could you tell us how our learning community can contact you either by email address, by phone, or both?
Okay. You can contact me at saw7777@gmail.com. That's usually the one that I will. That's the email that I will have for probably the rest of my life, or as long as long as Google is in existence. And you can also join my my virtual community, Down South Innovation, at downsouthinnovation.org. We'd love to have you, and we'd love to have you contribute information about what's going on with you.
Well, great. And as a special thank you, I have a copy of
Excellent.
Business Acumen 2, which is insights from the faculty and friends of the Coles College of Business for you.
Thank you.
And so certainly some pretty good readings and writings in there for you. And we certainly want you to have that with our thank you. And with that smile, we'll bring today's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. So we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. And also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. For those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the EMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect with us and sign up for an information session, which happens to be this coming Saturday. So join us again at the same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.